We're so glad you've joined us for this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson here with Lou Ann Crane.
And our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. As we all look forward to Valentine's Day tomorrow, today we'll hear the story of one couple who walked an incredibly painful path in life, and Ryan, their marriage almost didn't even make it.
Well, it seems like an odd choice for this romantic time of year, but I just know there is someone listening who is right in that same situation. And we have hope to give you on today's Family Talk through the story of Jim and Jill Kelly.
And we are so excited to be able to offer you that hope today. The Lord has truly done some miraculous and beautiful things in this family. So let's get right to it now as our host, Dr. James Dobson, introduces these two guests on this Family Talk broadcast.
Jim, of course, is known to football fans everywhere as a Hall of Fame NFL quarterback. He actually went to the University of Miami. I'm not going to hold that against him, but played quarterback there. And then was drafted in the NFL and played for the Buffalo Bills from 1986 to 1997, and led his team to four Super Bowls between 1990 and 1993. And that is a big deal, as every football fan knows. And he's married to Jill. Jill is the founder and chairman of Hunter's Hope. That's an organization which seeks to confront the threat of a disorder. It's also a disease. Which do you call it?
Krabbe disease is what we call it. It's a leukodystrophy and a lysosomal disorder. Those are big words that most people...
Genetic is what that means.
Right.
Right. And that has all kinds of neurological implications.
Right.
Yes. What we're going to talk about that is we'll learn that cause is something that's very close to the Kelly's heart. Jill has also written a number of books, including her memoir called Without a Word, How a Boy's Unspoken Love Changed Everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to talk about. Hey, well, I want to explain. These folks live in Aurora, New York, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Western New York.
Right.
Right outside of Buffalo.
Right. And you all jumped on a plane today with short notice and flew all the way to Colorado. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do this program. And then you're going home later today. But the fact that you would come here and be with us means a lot to me, and I really appreciate it. Jill, I'm going to start with you. How did you meet this man? How did you all get acquainted?
Well, that's a popular question these days.
Yeah, because we both have different memories of exactly what occurred on that night. But no, they weren't too crazy.
Well, yeah. I just graduated from college. I was invited by some friends to go to a party at Jim's house. He was notorious during the Super Bowl years and really throughout his NFL career of having parties at his home after every home game. And all the players would go. So a friend knew a friend knew a friend. You know how that goes. Invited myself and a sorority sister friend of mine to go to his party, of course, you know. We are going, you know. We went to the party, and eventually, somewhere in the middle of the night, we were introduced to each other, and that's when we officially met. And towards the end of the evening, Jim was, you know, flirting here and there, throwing ice cubes at me from across the room.
You
and
did
then
that?
I don't remember that part. That's one of the things that I don't remember about this conversation here.
Jill, you were skeptical of this man to some degree.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. I mean, Jim was the Hall of Fame quarterback, you know. Everybody knew who he was. Everyone wanted a piece of him in some way. And I was fresh out of college and very naive, but yet caught up in all that his life meant, you know. Yeah. And so I was attracted to him in that sense, but not enough to allow myself to just fall into that. So that night, at the end of the night when we met, he asked me for my phone number. And he actually put it this way. He said, "So how do I get a hold of you?" And I said, "Well, you don't." So I left without giving
you
my number. And it just so happened that that was a good thing to do.
Yeah, it was. And then it ends up this way is because I found out she had a boyfriend. That's why she said that she couldn't give me her number. And then when I found out she broke up with her boyfriend, I called her, but I knew she knew I was going to call her, so she broke up with him knowing that that phone call was coming pretty soon.
He's got a good story.
Of course. And look where we are today.
How long did it take you to get married?
Well, we We dated for probably about 4 years, and then I moved to Florida with some girlfriends of mine from high school. And then Jim eventually asked me to move in with him. And at this time, neither of us are walking with the Lord. Mm-hmm. We do not have a relationship with him. We're raised in very moral households. So I took into consideration what my parents would think and how they would feel about that decision. But I knew it had to be my decision, and I chose to move in with Jim.
Did you know it was wrong?
I knew that it was not the right thing to do, but I didn't know the magnitude of the decision at the time because I was selfish. I was living for myself and wanting, you know, the things of this world and what a lifestyle with Jim could offer. So I moved in with Jim, and 4 months later, I was pregnant.
Surprise.
So, and, you know, we share this, and whenever I have an opportunity to speak at women's events, I share this because it's part of my testimony. It's part of what God has redeemed in my life. It's a decision that I made and that Jim made during those years of not walking with the Lord. But I'll tell you, I am absolutely for abstinence, and our girls will be abstinent until they're married. Mm-hmm. Right, Jim?
You better believe it.
We've got this all figured out. They will be abstinent. And they know our story.
Jill, that's a great point, because I know a lot of women especially who say, I blew it, and now I'm trying to raise a child. Why should she listen to me? I did it wrong. Mm-hmm. But you're saying you still stand firm on that.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, I've been set free. And I don't carry any shame with me because Jesus has paid the penalty for that shame. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to walk in that guilt or shame when I know that he has also redeemed her life. Mm-hmm. And that she has prayed fervently before her daddy came to know Jesus. She was fervently praying more than anyone for his salvation. So God got a hold of her heart. And not only has he redeemed us, he redeemed her as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, the first child was not Hunter, is that
right?
No.
Yes. No. Hunter was our second child.
Second child. And were you married by then?
Yes, we were.
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting story because we were very blessed to have Aaron. And then, of course, Joe and I got married. And then that's when my football career became no longer. I decided to retire from the game. I played ever since I was a little boy. And I remember that day because it was January 31st, 1997, when I decided to walk away from the football field and start focusing on the family. And Jill was pregnant at the time. And of course, 2 weeks later on Valentine's Day, which is my birthday, our son was born. And when he was born, I mean, first thing I said was, I thank God that he's healthy. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, after he became sick at 4 months of age, that's when Jill's and myself's direction started going opposite directions.
Yeah, you began to suspect that there was something not right with Hunter.
Oh, yeah. But we did. We took him home from the hospital, and he seemed absolutely fine. But it seemed very shortly after he was home, maybe within the first week, 2 weeks, he became very irritable and was crying almost all day except for when he was sleeping. So initially, you know, you're talking to the pediatrician. They said, well, he's showing signs of colic probably. Yeah. So stop nursing and try formula and try different sorts of bottles. And so we did that. And so initially he was diagnosed with colic. And we knew, okay, no, this has got to be more than colic. It is taking him an hour to get an ounce of formula down. Mm-hmm. So that alone, you know, you're just, and he's crying at the same time. So you're thinking something is seriously wrong. And so we went in for a well visit. Now, mind you, this is a well visit, a visit when you're expecting to go in there and they're just going to measure him and, you know, measure his head and his body and tell you all these great things that he's continuing to progress. And we walked out that day with a diagnosis of cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And we were shocked.
But
shocked. Devastated.
I was floored, devastated, you name it. Yeah.
And we knew, though, that you can start intervention. And that's exactly what they said. You can start intervention right away, physical therapy, occupational therapy. So we did that immediately. We started intervening in every way that we could. But still, and a mother knows, you know, as a mom, you just know something is really wrong here. And this is just... And then he would start to have seizures. And eventually we did see a neurologist when Hunter was 4 months old, and he was diagnosed through blood work, some tests through blood work, with Krabbe disease. And when we sat across from our neurologist, she said, he has been diagnosed with Krabbe disease. He will not live to see his second birthday. And there is no cure. There is no treatment. And if you would like, we will put a feeding tube in. You know, and these were...
Because he couldn't swallow.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
Jim, you know, I'm a dad. What's going through your mind when they say there's nothing you can do? You are helpless in this situation.
You said it, helpless. Here you are as a professional athlete thinking that you could find the answers to everything. You know, you're a person that, you know, people came to for answers, and here I had no answer for my son. And then it got to a point where I said, God, why? Why, son born on my birthday? Why does he have to be sick? And I was mad at God.
Sure.
I was anybody to try to make me feel better wind up making me feel worse. And and that's when I said that very shortly after that, within months after that, Joe and I went totally separate ways as far as our belief. Jill wind up seeking the Lord, and I wind up running away from the Lord. Mm. And
running away from Jill to a degree.
Pretty much we ran away from each other, yeah. And it really almost ruined our relationship, our marriage. And it took a hit for 8.5 years. We were not very good communicators. Jill would run to her mother, talk to her mother about things. I would go to my brothers. We would never talk amongst each other until we sat down with a marriage counselor. And then we started talking about things. And also, I started learning things when Jill was writing this book that I never knew about her. Okay. Until we started communicating is when we finally started realizing more about each other.
Yeah.
But from that point on, Jill went through a lot.
Well, and Jim is so right, and I'm sure, Dr. Dobson, you know this in dealing with families for many years, that men and women deal with tragedy totally opposite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my expectations, I heaped expectations on Jim that he was never able to fulfill. They could only be fulfilled in Christ. I didn't know that, though, until I knew Christ. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Jim, so here I was dealing with my own grief in not necessarily the loss of Hunter because he was still alive, but the loss of our hopes, our dreams, our just all that I knew that Jim had wanted in a son, that I had given him this son, and now this son is sick. So I was in wrestling with Hunter's 24-hour care. I mean, he was 24-hour care nonstop around the clock, and we had a two-year-old.
You had to sleep with him sleep with him.
I slept with him for 8.5 years. So, keep that onto a marriage.
Explain why.
Well, first of all, he was eventually, by the time he was 8 months old, he was on oxygen 24 hours a day, and he needed suctioning, and he was on a feeding pump, and he needed chest therapy every 4 hours. And as he got older, his complications got worse. I mean, he wasn't able to blink anymore, and we had to monitor his eyes with special gel and putting special things that my mom made for his eyes. But, I mean, he had his hip dysplasia, and I mean, so all those things, but I have to just emphasize that. So here you have this family in complete turmoil, and we are treating Hunter like he's dying for the first year and a half of his life because that's what we were told.
Mm-hmm.
We are hopeless until our great hope, until Jesus intervened. And then we all started living, and that was the beauty of when Christ did intervene and when I wanted heaven for very selfish reasons. When Hunter was diagnosed, I believed that here's this little boy, he's going to go to heaven. I didn't understand the things of heaven. I didn't understand the things of God or his son Jesus. I didn't know any of those things. But I wanted heaven. So for selfish reasons, I'm running after heaven, but I find Jesus. And Jim is running in an opposite direction. So I'm consumed at home with Hunter and seeking after God. And Jim, he's working, providing for the family, doing NBC, ESPN, all of those things, but running away from everything that was going on at home.
Yeah.
And you had hoped when Hunter was born and diagnosed that would pull Jim back into the family, didn't
you? Well, I assumed because that's what happened for me. I mean, all of my priorities changed. And then when the Lord intervened in my heart, I mean, then everything changed. But, yeah, I mean, and that's what I say when I say expectations.
Yeah.
And now I see how they were not right. My expectations on Jim probably helped to push him away to a certain degree. And God had to do that work in my heart. And it took time. And it took self-control and all of the things that I was lacking when I was living apart from the Lord.
Jim, what were you thinking during that time?
Well, the whole thing with Hunter was, and Jill, we just looked at things differently. One of the things, I was born and raised in a family of six boys. I was always told never to cry. And
five of them played football, didn't
we? We all played, so all six of us played.
All six.
and we played and beat on each other, you name it, we did it. But I was always told never to cry. When I'd start shedding a tear as a kid, my brother would say, I'll give you something to cry about, and they'd hit you harder. So, I mean, imagine being raised six boys. So my way of grieving over Hunter and was not to cry until I was on my own. And I now know that that really hurt her because she, at times, probably thought I didn't care. And she was used to holding Hunter a certain way. And this is one of the things that drove me a little further away. When I would hold him, I was never holding him the right way. And even though Jill, because she was there with him every single day, and it just, because we both loved him so much, but that almost drove me away from holding Hunter because I never could do it right. But now that I, as I look back on it and see all the things that Jill went through, you know, I like to smack myself upside the head because we handle things differently. When she ran to Jesus, I ran away. And my own way of going to my buddies, you know, she'd have Monday night Bible study. I'd be watching Monday night football. So even nothing you know, wrong with Monday night Bible study because that's when I usually have our men's fellowship now.
Or nothing wrong with Monday night football.
Yeah, exactly. But the bottom line is we handled things so differently. And that was what was driving us apart. And then I'd come home and – but I didn't have God, Jesus in my heart. Yeah. And I didn't know that. But until I did – I can look back on it now and say, now I know why I did the things I did. Now I know why Jill did and said the things she did because she was trying to bring me in when I was running from it because early in my career, I had the good Lord pushed on me, and it turned me off. When
you mean people tried to witness to you?
In our locker room too many times. And I'm always one to be a leader. I always said it's not what you say, it's how you say it to somebody. And I think some of the players on our team went about it the wrong way. I really do. It's not what you say. It's how you say it to somebody, how you get them to believe in your beliefs, whether it's on the football field, whether it's, you know, in your church or whether it's in your business. Being able to have people understand where you're coming from and have the passion to have them, you know, seek for it and understand where you're coming from. And it took me a while, but finally I got it.
You guys were a family in a great deal of difficulty, weren't you?
Yes, we were.
I mean, your marriage is falling apart. You've got this little boy that you both love, and yet the demands of taking care of him must have been exhausting.
It was exhausting for not only Jill, but exhausting for our mother. We had a lot of people in and out of our homes. And then we decided to have another girl. So we added to the family with a girl by the name of Cameron. And thank God Cameron, she carries the gene like Joe and I do. Erin, our oldest daughter, our 15-year-old, doesn't carry the gene at all. So she never has to worry about it. And then there's Hunter, who has the disease. Yeah. So we hit every element of Krabbe leukodystrophy you can. But
he lived for 8 years, didn't he?
Unbelievable. He lived to be 8.5 years, and it's just a testimony that God ordains every single day that we've been given. You know, and Jim will give praise to the way my mother and I cared for Hunter, but I know without a doubt, and I'm thankful that we were able to take care of him, but I know that it was Christ alone who sustained Hunter, who provided joy in the midst of all of his suffering. And ultimately, it was our one and only son, his suffering, that brought us to the only suffering of Christ. So, you know, and I can say these things because I have buried myself in God's word because I had nowhere else to go. And that's how I felt. So for years, and I feel even more desperate for the Lord now than I did when Hunter was here. You know, I literally consumed myself with the word of God, and I am still consumed to this day for survival.
He had a personality. Although he wasn't speaking, he was exhibiting a personality to you all. Tell us who he was. Who was Hunter in your family, to your friends, to the people around you?
Well, he was full of personality, even though he was cognitively functioning. So he understood exactly what we were saying. And eventually, when he was 3 years old, we did teach him to blink once for yes. But when Christ intervened and we started to treat Hunter like he was living, we started to treat him like he was living. So we took him snowmobiling. Yes, we had the oxygen in tow. Yes, we had the suction machine next to us in a separate, you know, snowmobile. But we treated him like he was living. So we were going to allow him to have every opportunity. Were we crazy? Probably. You know, horseback riding. I mean, the things that, and he loved horses. He loved, loved, loved his sisters. Yeah. And they spent a ton of time with him, and they still miss him desperately. Mm-hmm. But in Jim, you know, doing the things that he was able to do with Hunter, you would probably want to share those.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to do the guy things. Yeah. And I know what we would sit down, we'd watch football games together, and I would – the Buffalo Bills haven't been a very good football team as of last 10, 12 years, something like that. So what I would do with Hunter, I'd sit down, and if Buffalo Bills weren't doing very well that particular day, I'd say, Hunter, we're going to take a little intermission here. I'd go over to my archives and pull out Daddy's football game, which we usually won, except in the Super Bowls, but we won't talk about that. But I'd pull out some of the good games and show him how Daddy was, you know, would drop back, and I'd replay the good plays. I'd fast forward past the bad ones.
And he would understand.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And you can tell because when we used to sit down and watch games together, or I'd sit there and do, you know, I'd dress up, I'd have my camouflage outfit on, and I'd do turkey calls with them. I'd do elk calls and do all my calls with them, had them all, I'd show them all, or do the rescue heroes. He would seldomly need suctioning. And when his mind is on something that he really, really enjoys and he's feeling good, you don't need to suction him. And that's when you continue to keep doing what you're doing. But just loved those times. And then having Jill and them take him snowmobiling and some of the things that you would think for a child that couldn't walk, talk, you know, couldn't really do anything, had no motor skills, but inside you knew he was loving it. Be able to do those things, it just is unbelievable.
He really did, without being able to even express himself, bring you all to the Lord and to each other.
And so many other people, too.
Oh,
it wasn't just us. It took me a little bit longer. But Jill, her mother, her father, her brother, and
my brother. Jim's brother,
wow.
Dan, his wife.
So many people because, he never spoke a word, mm-hmm. but he changed so many people's lives. And even through our foundation, when we have families coming up to us holding their children in their arms and thanking us for our foundation and thanking us because they knew by our son's suffering, we are helping others. And automatically, I rewind the tape back to when Hunter was diagnosed, when all those people kept coming up to me saying, Jim, you are a chosen father. Through your son, you will change lives. It took me a while to understand that. I get it now. It took me, I mean, it did. It took me a while. It took me years. But I finally get it. And I wish I would have known how it feels. And I wish I would have got it a long time ago because right now I'm on a cloud that we are flying and we are now helping people. And I always say this because Hunter, even though, you know, he'll never get to run out on a football field and hear 80,000 screaming fans, he's going to do greater things. Without speaking a word, he's going to change the lives of thousands and thousands and thousands of kids.
Our time has really gotten away from us. I want to make reference to the title of your book again, Without a Word, How a Boy's Unspoken Love Changed Everything. So where we're going, and I'd like to do another program with you, is that the Lord used Hunter to heal your relationship.
Amen.
He's in heaven today. He's not with you, but he played a role without being able to speak. Will you stay with us next time, and we will pick up right here.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
And we do hope that all of you listening can join us for more with Jim and Jill Kelly on the next edition of Family Talk. If for some reason you can't do so on your favorite Christian radio station, remember you can always download our podcast or stream the conversation at drjamesdobson.org. There's just so much more to this story that you do not want to miss.
Or if there's been someone on your heart as you were listening to this discussion that you know would be helped by the Kelly story, we'd love to send you a CD of this program to pass along to them completely with our compliments. You can call us for that at 877-732-6825.
And you just heard Dr. Dobson refer to the Kelly's memoir. Again, it's called Without a Word. We do have that available for you at drjamesdobson.org. And we're also pleased to let you know that Jill has just released a new book this year called Etched Upon My Heart, What We Learn and Why We Never Forget. It is precious and quite unique. Jill has learned many lessons through her own grief and pain, and she's written this book as a sort of living epistle to her daughters.
It really is beautiful. And you can find more about that book also at drjamesdobson.org. Also there, click on the link to the Kelly's wonderful organization called Hunter's Hope.
And there is one final important resource we want to make available today. If you are raising a child with special needs, or perhaps you've even lost a child and are dealing with the very same pain the Kellys have expressed today, we can send you a copy of Dr. Dobson's book, When God Doesn't Make Sense.
That's a good recommendation, Luann. For our listeners, you can call us for that at 877-732-6825 or find it when you're online at drjamesdobson.org.
We are so glad you could spend this time with us today, and we do invite you back next time for more with this wonderful couple.
And before we go, hey guys, don't forget, tomorrow is Valentine's Day. Do something special for your wife.
You just saved the day for someone listening there, right?
I hope so.
So we do invite all of you back here next time for our Valentine's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.